All right, welcome to episode 74 of the Bobbycast, and with Heather Morgan, songwriter, singer, songwriter. Hello, Heather.
Hi. Hi, Poppy.
Say hi again.
Hi.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you shouldn't have to sit so awkward. Hey, Mike, can we make our guests not sit awkwardly? Yeah.
Do I look like too proper?
No, we are. They don't give us good equipment, so we have to fix it. And you're small.
Like, adjust it for everything.
Who was the last person in? Move it down a little bit. She's like talking up into it.
Okay, it'll give me good posture. It's good.
There we go.
Perfect. Hey.
Who was the last person in? Jaren.
Oh, Jaren. Yeah. That's awesome.
All right, so by the way, welcome to the house.
Thank you for...
You got to meet the dog. Not everybody that comes
really?
In meets the dog.
Oh, I kind of made a buddy downstairs.
Yeah, so... Well, I think the last place I saw you was at like the listening room.
Yeah.
Where did we run into each other?
It was like a Christmas thing with... Because I was there with Kelly Bannon.
Yeah.
And somebody else was there. But I think it was like the side area that they have. Kind of everything gets... The back and forth.
And it was some charity show. I'm trying to remember. So I know we saw each other, and you had written something or put something out that I was like,
"Yes."
I was like,
"I remember that."
I stopped you again, and we didn't know each other. And yeah. I was like, "Hey, I just want you to know, I don't." Even
it was Megan Lindsay. Lindsay. I'm not. Well, Sergeant Lindsay is in my head because I have something there tomorrow. But Megan Lindsay, we had wrote a song a few years ago called "Cocaine and Jesus."
That's right. I'm gonna pull that up. And I remember going up because I had just heard it, and I remember seeking you out, and I was like, "She's gonna think I'm such a weirdo."
No.
And I was like, "This song is so good.
It's so raw."
It you know, I'm gonna play it right here, and this wasn't part of it, but which one is it, Mike? Oh, do you have a everything's hooked up to my Alexa, so I'm playing music into my bedroom right now that should be playing here.
Oh, gotcha.
Mike D's got it. Don't worry. There it is. Thank you, Mike.
Preacher's boy.
Let me start over.
Yeah. Raising hair.
All right. This is Cocaine and Jesus. Megan Lindsay recorded it.
Yeah.
This I couldn't remember what it was, and I remember
going up
to you and being like, I loved whatever. But I want to hear this again because it's been a while since I've heard it.
Yeah.
He grew up a preacher's boy, raising hell and making noise. She spent all the good years trying to save him. Never coming up for air. She'd follow him around everywhere. And every ounce of love she had, she gave him. Well, he loved her more. Loved her more than she'd ever know. But every time he pulled her close, she felt him leaving. He was living on the dark side of the moon. So far gone that pretty soon even chains of rain looked like freedom. He's high on cocaine. She's high on Jesus.
There it
She's
is.
Left.
Gives me goosebumps again. It's like the first time I heard it again. Like,
thanks.
I love it. You ever heard the song, Mike? It's good, right?
It's one of the... I remember writing that day because that's... Like, you know people in town and then, like, you finally get in the room with them. But I remember, like, some days I'll just have, like, an F it day. Like, just whatever's in the room. Like, you're not overthinking it. And she... I just remember getting on that and just feeling like, I don't know what this is. Like, we are going all the way there. When we start this. So she had the idea for Cocaine and Jesus. Like, she had that title.
The title, too. You look at it and you go,
what?
How? Like, that's the, those were, that's an odd juxtaposition. Like, they should not be together.
Yeah.
And then you hear it and you're like, wow, that's what it was. I remember now going up to you and pulling you aside and going, I don't want to be a weirdo. But that song, like, made me, like, feel goosebumps.
Thanks. So. That's so cool to, like, hear it again, too, because it's such a good production they did on that. And her voice is so emotional, and it has that like rasping that you like I mean, I believe her when she sing that. That, yeah, I remember you, I think you tweeted something about it because I was on the road. I remember, actually, where, remember where I was when I saw it. I had, like, run into a restroom on tour with Kelly Bannon. I was singing this, like, background vocals for her, and she was opening for Luke. And then my phone started, like, blowing up, and it was like, did you write a song about cocaine? Like, some of my friends, I was like, actually, I did. Must be the Megan song, so thank you. That's
yeah,
so cool.
It was really good. So, but what I like to do first is, like, to kind of give people just an idea of a few of the things that you've written, and then we'll come back around to it. But this is Brett Eldridge, Beat of the Music. Wrote this with Brett.
Yeah.
Made you a lot of money. Lose My Mind. Wrote that with Brett. You know the song that you wrote that hasn't been a single, but I love, is I'll Be the Moon. I had Dierks and Maren come sing it on
thank
the show.
Because
when that record came out, I was like, this song, it like blew
oh
me
gosh.
Away.
Thank you. And I'm so proud of that one.
Yeah, I
that
would be too, because... Like, it's crazy good.
I don't want to be a liar. I don't want to be a fool. I don't want to be a secret, but I will if you want me to.
Did you write that with Ryan?
Yeah, Ryan Hurd and Matt Dragstrom. Those are, oh, I remember that day. It was so weird. Like, Ryan came in with this idea about a sun and a moon, and I came in with basically an idea about a moon and a sun. It was just like, I remember being in a meeting and being like, oh, I'm going to go to this... I've got Ryan and Matt today. I want to write about this moon sun thing. And when Ryan said that, I was like, did like my song player text you about like just one of those weird moments where you're like, how are we on the same page before we ever like?
I love that song, and I know for you, you had to hope it'd be a single.
Oh yeah,
you had, because
yeah,
that's how you really get paid. But okay, paid aside, like that song, I bet more people have come up to you. That's
yeah, I've had a lot of people like.
It's my favorite song on the record.
Thank you. That, and I remember when they added Maren, because we didn't know who the girl was going to end up being. Like, I just did the, like, holding, sang the vocals so something was there so they could, like, model the singing after it. And then when Maren was on it, it was like, oh, okay, this is, like, even went to the next level. But I've had a lot of people, because I'll play it at shows just from, like, when I'm playing rounds or when I'm traveling and play it, and then people will come up and be like, that song just, like, tears me apart, but I've been on repeat, you know, like that kind of moment. So
Dierks owed me a favor, and I made him come with Maren and sing that song. That's why his album was coming out. I was like, dude, you owe me a favor. So call Maren, and you guys come
you
up and sing. He's like, it's not the single. I was like, I don't care. You owe me a favor. So they came
you.
Up. Let me do a commercial
so cool.
real quick. Did you know the average number of people who apply for any given job online is 118 people? Only 20% of those applicants get an interview because many companies use software to screen applications before anyone sees your resume. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
I didn't either. Start uploading your resume and you probably won't get a job unless you have an advocate. Express Employment Professionals is the local resource to help you land a new job. More than 18,000 jobs available weekly. When you interview at Express, they assess your skills, they connect you with available jobs, and they team you up in your job search. Manufacturing, accounting, customer service, sales, distribution, information technology, all of that. If you're tired of applying, what would you do if you weren't a songwriter, do you think?
Oh, gosh. I would be like a teacher, maybe.
Maybe?
Maybe.
If you're tired of applying online and never hearing back, visit your locally owned Express office today and speak with professionals connected to the available jobs in your community. Express never charges a job seeker to help find employment. ExpressPros.com today. Go check it out. Apply online. ExpressPros.com or visit an office nearby today. So, your story. What did you say?
What would I be?
No. I thought you said something like, that's interesting. I was going to say, yes, it is very interesting. So you're a Texas girl, huh?
I am born and raised.
Yeah, when did you move here?
2005. Somebody asked me the other day, and I was like, oh, it's kind of getting blurry. But around 05, and that's the same year that I signed my first, like, pub deal.
So you moved here, and how quickly did you get a pub deal?
I mean, it took a few months, which sounds probably lame to other people that have been here for a few years. But I made trips from Texas a few times, and I remember a couple of years before I moved here, there was a songwriter here that was like, I'm going to do a Texas night at the Bluebird. And so my kind of first trip where I spent more time, like a week here, was playing the Bluebird with some three other people from Texas. And then like we went out for barbecue and did the whole thing. And then when I got up here, there was, he's not alive anymore, but there was a guy that went to TCU where I went to college that I'd tracked down through a book. And then I like went and Xeroxed his like yearbook photo from like the 60s or 70s and then called him. This is weird, but
no, keep going. I'm, called him. I wonder where this is going.
I know, it's so weird. He actually worked for the prison system by the time I tracked him down. His name was Merlin Littlefield, and he had been the director at ASCAP, and I was ASCAP at the time. And so he called somebody at ASCAP and was like, "There's this girl that is coming up from Texas. She's new to town. Like, just let her come play you some songs." And so I went and played John Briggs songs at ASCAP, and then it was pouring down rain that day. And so I think I was in there for a couple of hours just playing. He was like, "Well, play something else, play something else, play something else." So I just kept playing him songs. And then he had a couple of people just come over from like the row and just like listen and like say hi. And then the next day, a couple of those people ended up calling me to come by their office. And it was like this weird like little snowball that started. And so then I would just go play for people if I wrote something new that I loved. And that was part of the beginning of my story. And then the other flip sides, right before I moved to town, there was a girl I met, and she said, "You should move to Nashville. You've got to meet my brother-in-law. His name's Joe Fisher. He is at Universal Music." And at the time, I had just played some shows with Rodney Foster, and he had, that was his song plugger. And so it was kind of this full circle little moment that happened. And so I called Joe like the first day I was here and was like, "When do I come meet?" Thinking that's just how it works.
Yeah.
And then I went to his office, and he was like, "Well, how many songs do you think you've written?" And at the time, whenever my gigs were really long in college, like these 3-hour gigs, I would just write more songs because I'm horrible at remembering covers. And so I was like, "I don't know, like 550, I don't, you know?" And he was like, "What?" So he was like, bring me songs. So I just go play for people, and then Warner Chappell ended up offering me a deal. So that's where I landed first, and then I ended up at Sony for like my second deal.
So you moved to town, and did you move to town what you wanted to be an artist?
Yeah,
with
I did.
That
you
in
know,
mind?
Yeah, oh, definitely. I had a band in college, and they were in Austin, based in Austin. So I would like finish classes on Thursday and usually go meet them down in Austin and play like Cheatham Street Warehouse or Green Hall and around Dallas, like this place called Poor David's Pub. And I mean, there's so many places to play down there. And I used to tag along with like Randy Rogers. Remember that? He's awesome. And the Eli Young guys, and Rodney was kind enough to let me play with him. And then when I got to town, it was kind of this season, I feel like, in the business where my publisher at the time was like, "You just sing your own demos and then like we'll pitch them and then people will hear you." And but then I started getting cuts, and so it was like, "Oh, but now you're like being successful on the other side of it." So
is it weird, because I have a friend who's going through this now where he's had a couple hits, but he came to town to be an artist, but
yeah,
he started to make money songwriting, and to
yeah,
go be an artist, it's almost a sacrifice of time and money.
Yeah, so like the flip of it.
So you're like backing away from something you're just now being successful at.
Yeah, it can be a weird. Yeah, it's kind of. I mean, I definitely had a moment of like, well, these doors are opening. Like, I love songwriting. Like, I've always done it. I have this video when I'm like a little kid, and we were in California about to go to the airport, and my aunt's like filming me to like kill time while my parents are probably loading the car. And I'm like, "This is a song by Heather Morgan." And I like sing it, and there's the vibratos all there. And so I'm kind of like, well, I've been doing this for a really long time too on that side of it. So I now, like in my own story, I love watching my friends like Natalie Hemby and Lori McKenna kind of do it that way, because I've always been such a fan of Patty Griffin and like Gillian Welch and kind of the Americana part of things a little bit. That like, I just made a record, and I'm finishing up this week, but...
Really?
Yeah. Just, like, I know that's something that's important to me, so I've kind of been doing it on my own. But in that vein, so I can still, like, write songs and have that. But I want that lane in my life, for sure.
Like, you still want to play?
Yeah,
you
still want to play.
Do you still want to pursue that?
But...
Like, on a...
Not, like, I don't... I sat next to a music critic at a wedding not too long ago, and he was like, I played him some of the music, and he was like, "Why don't you want to be Adele?" And I was like, there's already, like, that's awesome. I think that's so cool. But I was like, I just want to play, like, beautiful places and get to share my music. I feel like, because, I don't know, when I get to do songwriting shows even here in town, there's just such a, like, I have such a gratefulness for it that sounds so weird. I don't know. It's something that happened a couple of years ago, where this thing, like, this button got pushed within me or something like that, where it was like, it's good. It's good in any capacity. Like, I just, I get happy. I'm happy when I get to play, if that makes sense. So I'm trying to create a little bit more of that and copy Laura McKenna or go that route.
How does it work? I think of a lot of people that listen to this and, you know, it, the songwriter part of it, and you talking about writing, like today, I assume you wrote.
Yeah.
Most people that come over to the house, they write before they come over. Mm-hmm. So how are you, how does the songwriter book with other writers?
Well, luckily, with being in a publishing deal, they kind of, I guess, cast your calendar almost in a way. I don't know if that's, if I just made that up, maybe. But they'll book, like today I was with Mackenzie Porter that's with Big Loud Records. I'm hoping I'm saying that right. And then Lindsay Rhymes, this guy that's a great writer, engineer, producer, all of the above from Australia. So, and we, the three of us had never written before. And then Mackenzie's publishing's with Sony. Actually, we're all Sony writers, so that was kind of probably an easy thing to put on the calendar.
So they created the day.
Yes. And so, like, locate. So when I, like, look at my calendar yesterday, you know, it was like 10:30 Sony Fire Hall with these guys. So
how far ahead are you booked?
Right now, I know I've got stuff through, like, November, but it's not, like, it's kind of, like, there's holes in that. It's not, like, solid.
Do you leave holes in case that's like, hey, I want a day I can write with X friend?
Yeah, and that's what, this year with my guy at Sony, he was like, I'm not gonna book you, like, 5 days out every day, and you're not gonna have any room if something cool comes up. Like, we leave room for that, or we kind of shuffle if something that just seems like it's the right thing to put on a day that might have something else, try to make room for all that stuff.
So with something like, and I'll just play this here from Brett, something like Beat of the Music.
Yeah.
Was this something you scheduled?
Yeah, that was scheduled. That was our first write together with Ross and with so Brett.
It's you, Ross, and Brett.
Mm-hmm. And that was,
I mean, that's a pretty, like, Ross is as good as it gets.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Brett can write and sing his brains out.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, how do you feel walking into that, right?
Oh.
Do you get super prepared?
I feel like no.
Are you the opposite? You like to go in and just kind of see where it takes you?
I mean, I'll definitely have ideas and stuff, but those guys, it's, I mean, I've been riding with them for so long now that it is really kind of, there's like a spontaneous magic that seems to have kept up with what that combination is, and also like everybody's job kind of, I don't know if this makes any sense, but I'll compare it to like baseball. That might be a terrible metaphor, but
we'll see.
But like I feel like in that situation Brett is at the batter's box, and then like maybe Ross is playing shortstop and maybe I'm on first base, but that we kind of, Brett is so creative, and he, like, stays up at night, and he has so many ideas that, like, he probably can't even make enough albums for all the stuff that's going on in his brain. So our job is kind of just, like, catch the magic. And kind of, like, when it's coming at you so fast, try to be like, okay, that's the thing that feels right. And then Ross is so great at interpreting, like, what Brett's trying to convey, if it's a beat or if it's, like, a key or a vibe. That it is kind of this, like, we're like just, it's so weird how it happens because we've done it so much that
they're both pretty ADD-ish too.
Well, and I am too. Like, if you're listening to my answers, like, here, I'm like, what? Let's go here and come back. But maybe we all cancel each other out somehow.
Are you consider now in the Brett camp since you have multiple songs?
I guess maybe I get to come to camp. Yeah, I think, I hope so.
Like, you get to be in a camp after, because, I mean, here's, you know, Lose My Mind.
Yes.
Now, which one of those came first?
Which one came first?
Yeah.
Beat of the Music and then Lose My Mind. Is that what you're asking?
Were they written, Beat of the Music first and then Lose My Mind?
Yeah. Beat of the Music and then Lose My Mind. Yeah.
So about the second hit you get,
yeah,
are you then in the camp? Everybody's got camps.
Yeah.
Everybody's like in the Carrie camp. The
I know,
camp.
Everybody. That term used to be so LA to me, and then now I'm like, oh, it's a Nashville term now. But
so if Brett will just call and be like, hey, can we get together on a?
Yeah, we'll try it. Like, we actually, Ross and Brett and myself, right now we all have the same song plugger, and so like in November, we did, like, Ross and I went on the bus for a run of shows when he was opening for Keith, and Maren was like out there, so she had people on her bus that were writing, and then with like a week later. Oops, sorry, I just hit the mic. A week later, like on a Wednesday, Brett texted and was like, "Hey, do you want to come on the bus tonight? We're going to do another run of writing." And so there was like two I did back to back, but they were both like, the first one was more planned than the second one. The second one was kind of like very spontaneous.
So when you go on a bus to write, like I go on a bus when we play shows, like
we
hop in and it's everybody's in a bus and you're in a bunk. So that's what you're doing. You go.
Yeah.
You're on the bus.
Yep.
And then you set aside a few amount of hours.
Yeah. Like we'll start writing first thing in the morning, or we'll go get breakfast at like catering or something and then write until lunch, and then sometimes write a little bit more in the afternoon. And then when we were out in November, Ross and I tagged along for his like workout session with his trainer. And then afterwards he had to go sound check, and then we kind of watched part of the show. And then once he was done, we wrote while, I guess Keith had started a set, and then he had to go back out for the encore.
Sounds like a lot of work.
It can be pretty intense.
At
it's
least
a good
long
intense.
Hours.
I it's guess, like... yeah, because you're like, we have this time and we know you're leaving at, you know, four, you have a meet and greet, or five, you have a meet and greet. So let's try to get this vocal, or let's try to get a couple songs done.
And you take with Ross, and I've written some stuff with Ross.
Yeah.
He has a computer and he does all mm-hmm. the.
Yes.
So is that the kind of the rig that you guys record in? Like Ross takes his laptop and you put a microphone on a table and you just mm-hmm. write and sing into it?
Yeah, pretty much. Sometimes I'm like the scriber. I feel like the girl that's trying to catch all the words. Ross will be like, "Do you have that?" I'm like, "Yes, I have it."
I bet that's just like throwing with those two.
Yeah.
It's just, and again, I haven't spent enough time around you to know it, but with those two, it's just like, bah, bah, bah.
Yeah. So it can get goofy in a good way, like where you're kind of slap happy, I guess.
Tell me about this one here. Love Someone from Brett.
Yes, we wrote that in town, actually. We, I remember, I think it was going to have a different angle on it. Like, sure would be nice to love, like, kind of thing. And I remember Ross and I being like, man, let's do a love song. Let's just go for it. Make it a love song. And make sure the angle, like, let the angle be that you already, like, love somebody.
So you three are kind of the thing, then.
Well, I mean, we have a lot. We work well together, and we know we've known each other for a really long time. Like, we've known each other before anybody cared about anything that we were creating.
Isn't that the best, though?
Yeah.
Because it's like, in this town, you're cool once things start to happen.
Yeah.
And once things start to happen, people want to hang out with you.
Yeah.
And then you're like, they only want to hang out with me because things are happening.
Yeah.
But if you have people that you kind of struggled with,
yeah,
you never have to worry about that.
It's so funny. I mean, I have this memory of walking down one of these alleys on Music Row, because we couldn't, like, the three of us couldn't get into a party. Like, nobody would let us in, and so we had to, like, we just went and hung out at this old office building that I'm pretty sure is Shakti Yoga now.
Oh, yeah, right there near the radio station.
It's right.
I go there sometimes on Tuesdays.
Okay, yeah, so you know exactly the alley I'm talking about. But, like, we didn't have any money. I think Brett told the story at the number one party for Be The Music that we all, like, pulled together, like, $8 and bought a bottle of tequila and went to the empty publisher house and we were like, okay, we'll just hang out with each other. So I was like, yeah, I do remember that. I remember what I was wearing. So
when you came to town, would you say it was 05 or so?
Yeah, about 05.
Who were the people that, because everybody kind of has classes.
Yeah.
Who came to town around the same time you came to town that you get to know early on?
That I still knew. Well, I would say I feel like my class kind of turned out to be, like, John Knight, and then Ross, of course, and then Nicole Galyon. People that are still, like,
Nicole's got a really good one of these, too, if you're listening to this. Nicole's was really
good. She has a great, great podcast. Just from early on, those are the ones that I still, like, see, and then I met Jaren a little bit later, but not too much later.
Jaren Johnson?
Yeah.
Was he American Bang or Cadillac 3 or
He was actually, it was American Bang when I met him.
Yeah.
And then I just remember riding with him. My first time to ride with him, he had, like, amazing sunglasses on. He looked like he was a Beatle, kind of. And then thinking, like, this guy, wow, he's, like, wait, how is this happening? Because he's so cool, and I'm just a girl from Texas. And then we ended up hitting it off, and we've been buddies ever since. I love how, like, he'll say anything to your face.
Yeah, he will say anything. Right to you.
To you. There's,
and then,
like,
we talked in here, and then he texted me for like an hour calling me out on things right after we finished. Because he was like, I forgot to say this. And he sent me a text.
Yeah. I don't know.
But it's always, I like consistent people.
Yes. He is that for sure.
I know what to expect.
Yeah.
And I don't have to worry that you're pulling something over or being some odd way. If I know, I can trust that you're going to always give me the same kind of person.
Yeah.
That's what I like about Jaren.
Yeah. Like it's I all, can totally it, appreciate
it's
that.
It's always
too.
Note. By the Beat of the Music was like the song of the year, BMI song of the year, right?
That was very life changing. That was so crazy. Because I remember the year before for the BMI Awards, I wrote Jody Williams an email telling him, like, it was almost, it probably read like a school assignment. It was like, "Dear Jody, this is why I would love to be included in the BMI Awards," because I wasn't getting one. And I wrote him a list of why I thought it might be good for my career, just to get to, like, be there for the night. And he, like, gave me an extra ticket that those things are kind of hard to get into. So he was really kind, gave me an extra ticket. And then the next year was like the first year to get an award, and then we won Song of the Year. So afterwards he was like, "Remember that email you sent me last year?" He's like, "You really won 80 this year." But my sister came with me for that, and yeah, it was really awesome. I just remember somebody was talking to me when they were like about to announce it, and somebody else from the table like hit me, and they were like, "You need to be watching."
Did you think you'd win?
No, I didn't know. They were like, "Make sure you have family there." And I was like, "Well, I'll bring my sister. Like, she'll have fun. She'll, like..."
You bring just enough family to have family.
Right. Yeah.
And if you lose someone that you're still okay with
you're
losing
still,
with.
Totally. So, it was... Those nights are so fun. But I remember, like, my hands wouldn't stop shaking. It was so weird. Like...
After you won? Or
yeah,
before?
It was like this. I mean, like, why are my hands doing that? That's so weird. And
did you get cooler around town as far as people wanted to write with you?
Oh, gosh.
After that? Ooh. Like, did the calendar start to...
I feel like people gave me a shot that maybe didn't beforehand, and yeah, I do feel like there was a shift. I don't know if I got cooler for sure, but I do feel like some more opportunities came along, and it was just, I think it was just nice. Somebody said something really cool to me. It was actually at a Christmas party at Jaren's house. It was this guy, Mark Beeson, who's an amazing writer, and he said, "Your first hit song, like, represents all the songs that you wrote before that. It's just like a culmination of all the work you put in, all the risk taking you did, like all the times you showed up. That's what it also means." So he just wanted to make sure like I understood that angle on it. And it was so cool to hear that, because you never know. Like, we wrote a beach song in January one year and it ended up being that. So yeah, it was really cool. But I did feel like, oh, okay, like a big exhale moment. And the other cool thing I think that was fun that somebody described the moment as, Matt Jenkins said this. Sorry, Matt, I'm quoting you. But he said, he was like, "As a guy, it's like the first time you have to kiss a girl. You just, like, want to get it over with, having a hit song." He's like, "Now, like, I kissed a girl," basically, is what he said. Now, don't take that out of context. That's going to sound funky.
Now, that will quote you in the next one.
Great.
Let me ask you a question about this, because I remember talking about this on the radio show. So, this is Brett.
"You make me crazy."
Oh, yeah.
And this is the Gnarls Barkley.
"Does that make me crazy?" Yeah.
And this is... I don't even know what happened with this. Did you guys have to add them as writers?
Yeah, they're all on there. They didn't... Luckily, they were, like, kind, because they were like, what? It's a country song? Like, and so many people have... use that line. We were like the 1,000th people.
Is it because the success? Is that what bred the, "Hey, oh, wow, we need to get this on"?
Well, it kind of happened in the room. And I remember having that moment of like, was that on that or was that not? And then later we were at some event where Brett's team from Warner Brothers was there. And they were like, "Hey, we're working on the line from the song, Whistle Leaves My Mind." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And some NYU professor was like looking at it.
What on that line?
So like
they wanted to change it.
They wanted to change it, or they wanted to figure out like how much of that of the song was, I guess, percentages or something. And so I was like, "Well, those are the professionals. Like, we'll just leave it to that." Hopefully.
So did it go LA rules with the guys?
So they didn't get a lot of it. It really like, and the funny thing is, there's two guys. So it's CeeLo Green
and Danger Mouse.
Which is so cool. It's so cool to me, even though it's a weird situation. And then the two other guys are actually two guys that Gnarls Barkley borrowed from. So they're like the original people that created something, and then Gnarls Barkley borrowed from... So CeeLo and Danger Mouse borrowed from them.
Just that one part of it, though.
So, well, I guess for the Gnarls Barkley song, maybe, somehow. So somehow it's all... There's like three different... compositions, if you want to say it professionally. Like, the other thing is like an Italian musical from the 60s. I'm not kidding. Somebody came up to me at the Bluebird and they're like, "Do you know the history of your own song?" And I was like, "Apparently not. Nobody's ever shared that with me." So the two other guys have an Italian last name, and I don't know anything about them. But I do know that because it was number one, we won a pop award in London last year because of it. But just based on like the math of it.
Did that cost you a lot of money having to add all them?
Kind of.
Because again, sometimes once you start cutting percentages.
Not as much as it could have been. It could have been like really hurtful, but it ended up where I'm not like crying every time a check comes in because they have most of it or anything like that.
You know, it's weird. And in Nashville, the writing for the most part is different than in Los Angeles.
Yeah, because they can get down
they
to
they can
like,
get down to 5%. In Nashville, yeah, I don't, if it's three people, it's 33.
I don't know how they do that. That makes me so, like, that makes me nervous for people because I don't know how you decide. Like, do you have to have, a class monitor that's, like...
Like someone sitting
notes,
in the room?
Like,
right.
No, you have five words and he has seven. Like, I...
That is a weird thing, right?
Yeah, but it's also I would be terrible at that.
That if three people are sitting in a room and two of them do all the work and I know stories of people who are like just sat in the room and really didn't do much.
I know. Somebody told me once, and I've thought about that too, but I'm like, you know what? If that combination was there that day, something could have been different. Somebody could have said, like if it had been somebody else, you might have
a
different song.
Or could have been better.
Well, there is always that, but it's like, well, that's the song that showed up. And they were there.
I have a friend, and I won't say who it is, but he wrote a song, and they did it this right. And I'll just say I'll mess with the facts a little bit.
Yeah.
But it was him and a buddy that wrote a song.
Yeah.
And another artist was going to cut it.
Oh, yeah,
The other artist cut it. The other artist changed one word, and then the artist did, and then said, I'm taking a third of the writing.
Ooh, that makes me nervous, too.
Yeah.
See, that's where maybe LA needs to kick in because...
And it didn't.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's Nashville. And they wrote it at 50% each.
Oh, man.
The artist cut it, changed one word.
Oh, I hate that for them.
And then they were like, ugh, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
Because it's a big artist.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a major artist.
And that's such a crazy situation because then you're like...
Then what do? Do you not want the money? Do you not want the cut?
Yeah, where's the trade-off? Like... That way you get your song back with 50-50, but you don't get that.
The craziest thing is that, again, I got to mess the facts up a little bit, but the word that the artist changed was not a curse word. He changed it to a curse word, okay?
Oh, okay.
But then, for radio edit, they had to change the curse word back.
Oh, that would get so gnarly.
There's no change on the radio edit at all, but in the original version...
Wow. That sounds like a lot of paperwork.
It also sucks.
Oh, that's such a like doozy of a situation. That's it's like the greatest thing, and then like
there and again no names. Have you written with people before? You're like, I'll never write with them again.
Oh yeah.
And you put it on the list, like, because there are people I won't bring on the show anymore because it's been miserable.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, you know what?
It's a feeling.
It's just like, I did not enjoy that. I don't think it's good for my listeners.
Yeah.
I don't think it's good for me. So I'm not going to have them back on, at least for a while.
Yeah.
Has that happened with you before where you get in a room and you're like, ooh, I just can't
do this? I think that's one of the things about doing it for a while is that part of the part of what you get to do is write with people you love. And you can't wait to get back in the room with. So there have been situations where I was like, please don't, like, if we can avoid.
Have you ever left to write early because you just couldn't take it anymore?
Yeah, really early on. Like, no, I don't even know. I couldn't even literally tell you the person's name. But I do remember going into the tape room of Warner Chapel and being like, you have to call my phone. And I you got to get me out of here. Like, this is awful.
It was Garth Brooks, I heard.
It was Garth Brooks. Yeah. No, not at all. I'm like, how do you clip the letter? Tell me everything. It'd be like your John Mayer interview. It'd be like 9 hours long. You'd be like, are we writing a song? What's the deal?
Did they call your phone to get you out?
Yeah, they totally did. I was like, I just can't do it. I couldn't do it. Still. I was such a baby writer. But even my like instincts were like, this is bad. Just get me. Don't put my name on it. Just get me out of here.
If you see an artist, right, come up. Like, and it's they're writing for themselves.
Yeah.
Is that a different preparation than if you and a couple of your normal songwriters are writing together?
Yeah, like, I used to get really nervous about artist rights. Not in a bad way, just like, they need to accomplish something, and I hope I can help them get to what they need to find, song-wise. And there's also, you know, there's like this team of people that are telling them five different things, or maybe one thing. As a team, like, you're opening for this person and you're going to be playing this kind of venue and you really need a party song three songs in or something like that. We don't have it. You need to write that. And so hoping that whatever my brain does that day can bring it to them. But sometimes I'll just bring in a bunch of ideas and if I'm with a track person, like try to, there's been a balance. I feel like I've grown up a little bit as a songwriter with artists where if they like something I do, I just want to give that to them. Like be the best version of that writer for them. I hope that makes sense. But like there's a phrasing thing that I do that I just figured out that I've, some of my friends, when they were listening to the new Brett album, they were like, I can find your songs before looking them up. Which was cool to have that happen.
How could they find your songs before
looking them up? Like, they just hadn't, they were like, I feel like that's you. Like, on, like, Haven't Met You Yet's one that we have on the new record. And one of my friends was like, oh, I knew you wrote that. I didn't have to look it up. And I do that with my friends. Like, I can tell when Ross has something on the radio or Ashley Gourley has something on the radio or Nicole, like, I just start to know. There's one Jaren had with, like, Frankie Ballard that was Sunshine and Whiskey.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, that's Jaren. Jaren definitely wrote that.
Which one did you write? What you talked?
Haven't Met You Yet.
Let's see.
What, well, also,
by the way, Love Someone's from the new record that we just played.
Yes.
Let's see. Haven't Met You. That one's yours?
Yeah.
There's a half a million sunsets I haven't got to show you. Don't ask me how I know, but I know they steal your breath. And I can almost feel the feeling that you're gonna give me, especially when you kiss me like no one ever has. You're so real I can't explain it, don't keep me waiting. You could be in Dallas or LA, 30,000 feet up on a plane. You could be the dream that I always chased, every second, every place, always looking for your face. And I know it's one I'll never forget. So I guess I haven't met you.
That one's a fun one.
In a corner booth cafe.
Where'd you guys write that one?
We wrote that one actually in a cabin.
Look at you with your bus rides and your cabin rides.
Like,
dang.
Have song ideas, we'll travel. Yeah, we wrote that one out on this porch of this cabin that Brett's manager had. We had like no Wi-Fi whatsoever, and that was the first song of like five we wrote on that trip. And we really hold it. Like, we brought food and did not leave for like 3 days. I remember we did take a boat out into the water, and we lost, like, the manager's anchor, and, like, we got stuck, and it started raining with our guitars out there, but that was
a is that a song on the record, too? Lost My Anchor?
No. It needs to be a song, like, sorry for losing your, like, heirloom anchor into the river that we couldn't even get out. We tried. But so we had some adventures, but that was the first song we wrote from that trip, and actually we wrote that, like, kind of around the time of the last record, and then it just didn't fit the track listing for that. And so he kept saying, it's going to be on the next one. It's going to be on the next
Do you hear
one.
That a lot?
I hear it sometimes, but this is like the first time it's actually happened.
Do you hear that, hey, it's going to be the single, and it's not a lot?
Yeah, that does happen. That can be like, you know, I don't know, somebody joked, they're like, don't go buying a boat yet.
So do you become deaf to it? Or it's like, okay, it's the single. How do you know when it's the single?
Oh gosh. When you hear it on the radio.
Yeah.
Or literally, like, oh, I try not to get too into it. I mean, sometimes if I'm at Sony and nobody's at their desk, I'll kind of, like, peek at their notes. I'm bad about that. I'm like, oh,
what's on the notes? What would be on a note at Sony?
Like, sometimes from their morning meetings, it'll be, like, single coming out on, I'm going to pick a Katie Chesney, you know, or Keith Urban or something like that. They'll have it, like, in their own handwriting. Sometimes, now everybody's going to hide their notes from me in the office.
Let's see.
Don't let Heather in any of the offices.
How about...
We're all born to be
Oh,
free.
Yeah.
It's the Kenny song.
Yes.
Who'd you write this with?
Josh, Osborne, and Ross. And that one's funny. I was at a birthday party at a bowling alley, And I know Josh, I've written with Josh before, but I was like, I'm just going to text him and see if he can jump in with Ross and for our write the next day. And so I texted him and I was like, hey, I'm writing with Ross. Is there any way, like, you can jump in and join us? And he was like, man, I don't think I can. And then he texted me back like 30 minutes later and he was like, actually, everything on my schedule just got flip-flopped. I'm going to be there. And so I had this idea, but I had a different idea that was from the Super Bowl commercials. And then we ended up, like, kind of that got thrown out, but we kind of went on a tangent to where he had the, Josh had a line about looking for the Hollywood sign, trying to find the interstate. And then we were like, let's write a beachy vibe, but let's not have beach lyrics to it. And so the fun thing about that one, this is the first time this has ever happened for me, where when we finished the song, like, one day, let's say we finished it, like, 4 o'clock. By 9 a.m. the next morning, Kenny was like, I want it. It's mine.
Dude. Oh, wow, really?
Please don't send it to anybody else.
So who got it to Kenny that quick?
So Troy Tomlinson did from Sony.
So will people just hear a song and go, I think this fits for so-and-so.
Right.
And then they get it to them immediately.
Yeah. So in some instances, like, that was, I feel like that was a, you hear about it, but I had never experienced it. Like, this song is so great for so-and-so. And then you, and then somebody tells a story about how all the stars just lined up and it ended up being number one and something crazy like that happened. For this, it was kind of early on in his song searching process, I should say. So when I was like reading the notes or whatever, and I was sneaking, I'm just not like I sneak in everybody's office, I don't. But it was just a matter of like, is it still going to be on there? And I went to see him. I was writing with Lori McKenna in Boston, and so we went to his tour at Gillette Stadium. And I had the cut, and then backstage met some of the people just on his team where I, like, when Lori's so sweet, she was like, she has a song on the new record, it's called Sometown Somewhere, and they'd be like, oh, we're thinking about naming it, the tour that, and then the album was going to be called that for a second. So you get those little nuggets of, like, information where you're like, what does that mean? Is that bad if it's album title? Is that good? Like, who knows?
You have to think if it's going to be the album title and the tour title that eventually it's going to be a single.
Yeah, or you hope so.
It just has to be.
Yeah.
But then it wasn't.
But the fun part for me is early on, before I moved here, I remember being in college and missing a class to go down to, like, San Antonio or something like that and play, like, the Levi's side stage opening for him. And I remember parking my Jeep Grand Cherokee, like, next to the bus, and they gave me, like, my parking ticket. And I played probably at, like, 4 o'clock that day, and then he played that night. And I remember, like, you know, the guy selling pretzels on the side of the, like, you know, arena, not arena, but outside amphitheater, being like, you're really good, and, like, some kids playing hacky sack. And, like, my dad being like, this trip cost us a lot of money, like, to pay the band and food and hotel and all that stuff. But, and then this past November, I took my mom and I were at a party where Kenny was there, and like Kenny, like, I mean, my mom, like, pulls out pictures from the opening, and it's like, she has a song on your record now. It was a very, you know, full circle moment for her that you cut that song. And then I'm like kind of embarrassed, but kind of not, because she's like doing a good job of telling the story better than I would. But it's cool. I mean, of course, you hope any song's a single, but that one I was just super pumped to get to have it. That's just, I don't know. I guess you hear those people growing up, and then when they're singing your songs, it's
like
that weird.
Their voice is on your song.
Yeah.
Like you want it. I understand you want to do the single because you want it to be big and you want to make money.
Yeah.
But there's still something to somebody that you admire.
Yes.
Voice being on something that you wrote and created.
And like is why you love music or why you have had these life experiences where you experienced it before any of this. And that was definitely him for me.
So, everybody talks about singles, and it's a very singles culture
now. Oh, gosh, yes.
Because you want a single, and you want it to move fast, you want to get the next one.
Yeah.
Spin. I mean, there's
all that.
Yes, and that's how you make your money for the most part.
Yeah.
But let's just say you get 5 album cuts.
Yeah.
Like, is there money in 5-6 album cuts?
Yeah, well, that's what I have on Brett's. There's 5 on there that I wrote with him.
But if, let's say none of them become a single.
Yeah.
Will that just pay back your...
Like my draw for Sony?
Right.
Yeah.
Because your draw is what they pay you per year.
Right.
To just write for them.
Yeah. It's almost like an interest-free loan.
Yeah, it's a loan.
Yeah.
But then again, if they fire you, you don't have to pay them back.
Yeah, that's the I've tried to explain it to friends. They're like, but then when you, my dad's had a hard time with that one. He's like, but you got to pay him back. And I'm like, no, it's not really like.
It's more like they're investing in you.
Yes.
And you have to pay them back their investment. Right. And anything extra, you know, then it gets into the whole who keeps what.
Yeah.
But so if you do, if you have five or six album cuts mm-hmm. that never make it to singles, that's
they can add up.
That's
I
enough
guess.
For them to want to keep you, right?
Yeah. Oh gosh, yeah, yeah. I would. I mean, I'd hope so. I know there's, you know, I'm with somebody's really big and they're. People in New York that I've been up there a couple times, but I doubt, I'm sure they're still like, who are you? Maybe, hopefully they wouldn't be by now, but when it's all on paper, I would hope somebody would go to bat for me in Nashville.
Anyone ever say stop writing girl songs?
Yes, for sure. I remember the moment, like, I was working with somebody else at Sony, but still same publisher. And I remember having a meeting and it was like, don't turn anymore. Girl songs in. And I remember feeling like okay I'll do that. Ugh, but somebody explain this, like, why? But I was writing a bit with I was writing a time with Roston and still do now, but I remember just switching my focus and getting a Keith Urban cut and an Eli Young cut, like kind of some stuff that kind of as soon as that shift happened, also you could kind of be like, oh, well, that I did that then, and then now I have these songs that are on albums, so that must be true. Like, it must work.
Your success was coming from songs that weren't girl songs.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, do I
right.
continue chasing the few spots that I've landed? But did you stop writing girl songs?
Not altogether, no. I mean, and then I always have a tendency to, I call it night writing. Like, I'll go write my own songs at night. Sometimes at Friday nights, I'll just, like, lock myself in my house and play until, like, 3 in the morning. I've done that ever since I've had a guitar, so so I never, like, the girl songs never went away. They just... You know,
and that to me, and I am one of the fighters and advocates of females, but I think it's been, from the writing to the labels to radio, it's that's a perfect example of where it starts. It's the minor leagues of the development of female artists.
Yeah.
If you have people saying, hey, don't write girl songs, because, well, then there are girls without as many songs to choose from.
That's a great point. You're right.
And then if there are girls without songs to choose from, labels don't have girls with good songs.
Yeah.
Then radio, they don't get girls with good songs from labels.
You're so right.
And so it all goes back. And I did an interview with Billboard. They do this list where it's like Power 100.
Whatever. Oh, yeah.
They put everybody on it. So I'm just one of the people, right?
Like, well, that's still cool.
They're like, are you in Nashville? Do you have a job? You're on the list. So so they interview me. They're like, what's the biggest struggle? Awesome. And I was like, well, a couple of things. One, songwriters are not getting paid where they should. One of my friends goes to Capitol Hill and testifies for songwriters.
Yeah.
Lee Miller.
I wrote with him this week. Yes,
so
I love him. He's great.
You know, and so I talked to him a bit about it, and especially with streaming, because there are no laws yet. And it's not that streaming is screwing people over. There just are no laws to screw over.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get people to pay attention and create. If you're not lobbying people in D.C., they don't care.
Yeah. I've been up there twice now.
And lobbying costs money.
It does. It's not cheap.
And money's donations, and it's a whole thing. And so... They're asking me, hey, what's the problem? I said, well, I think one of the issues is songwriters being paid fairly. And, you know, you can have 10 million streams on a song and make $100.
Yes. It's crazy.
It's
like,
crazy.
Beauty of Music, I have the number. There was one quarter that it was played, like, streamed, like, 11, almost 12 million times. And I'm pretty sure my check was $193. Which is crazy.
It's crazy.
And when you think about it all going to that, it does, like, give me a panic attack. Because I'm like, how am I going to, like, keep doing this?
That's the problem. People aren't.
Yeah.
It's going to take the people that are on the edge already.
Yeah.
And it's... The product isn't going to be as good. Because you're not going to have as many people doing it.
Yeah.
People are going to go, I can't make what I want to make, so I'm going to go into this. So I said, songwriters... that's a problem. Songwriters have to get paid. And I said the development of female artists, but again, that also goes back into the songwriter.
Yeah, totally.
If songwriters aren't writing great songs, and and artists write as well, but if songwriters aren't writing great songs aren't being cut.
Yeah.
Great songs that are being cut aren't being picked up by labels and pushed to radio. So it's all a 1-2-3-4 process.
You're so connecting the right dots about how that...
But everybody just wants to scream at radio, and I'm like, listen, I will play anything good. Nobody in the world looks at, I don't care if it's a guy or a girl or a band, a duo, a 10-some, a 30-some. If it's a good song, people on the radio just want to play it because everybody just wants to keep their job.
Yes.
And ratings are how people on the radio keep their job.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what the song is.
Yeah.
No one's trying to hold trios, females, anything back.
Like, nobody's like...
There's no diabolical meeting in a room where a bunch of radio people
like
go, how do we keep women off the radio?
Right.
I do think that there are a lot of country radio people, because it's basically older white men who are running country radio. And they've been doing it for so long.
Yeah.
And I understand how scared you can be to lose your job, because everything, all media, TV, radio, it all is starting to condense, and it's all...
You feel
even with the writers, there are less writers.
I feel it in that.
All of it. So everybody's like, I got to keep my job, so I don't want to take any risks.
Yeah.
And what's the least risky thing to do is to continue the same exact thing. And what's the same thing? To continue putting on the same kind of songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Until it's a problem and it's almost unfixable. And I think now, over the past year, there's been a lot of development.
Yeah.
There hasn't been a lot of breakthrough yet.
Right. Maybe the roots are there.
I think the roots are finally starting to be there.
Because I ran into, you were talking the Billboard thing. I don't know Cam, so I'm not like, I don't want to speak as if.
I know Cam well.
Yeah. She's just somebody I really admire. And she had done a TED talk, so I think I was just like, hey, that was so cool of you. But briefly, I just said to her, like, you know, for a minute, it was like, where are the girls? Where are the girls? And then you have like Maren and Cam come out, and these, like, I just think the girls that are getting some time, and of course Miranda and Carrie, I do feel like they're so well spoken and they represent girls so well that I'm just hoping like that keeps, I just, like, a sophisticated thing, I don't know if that's the right word, is happening in the girl lane where some really cool girls are coming out, and I feel like I'm hearing more about them, and I feel like my calendar's reflected it.
Again, the roots are starting to take hold, but a tree doesn't grow in a week.
You're right, yeah.
And I'm getting screamed at, and I'm like, guys, I don't think you understand. Like, for 4 years, I've been doing entire weeks and having entire CMA festival shows with all females.
All girls,
And like, if you don't pay attention to this now, it's going to be a problem. Well, now it's a problem.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
But... as you're seeing it on level one, and you're at level one.
Yes.
You're creating the songs, which get to the artist. The artist cut them.
Mm-hmm.
They're then picked. The label takes them, services them to radio.
Yeah.
So
it's crazy. I have actually, this is happening on Wednesday night, so it's Monday. But you're buddies with Caitlin Smith.
I am. I love Caitlin.
We are doing Girls in Asheville on Wednesday, but that's kind of, it's not where it originated from. It wasn't a place of like, there's no girls being heard. We need to be heard. But it's a show in Nashville. It's 4 times a year. So we do like Girls of Summer is happening this week. But I remember us, like, the first show that we had having 14 girls on the stage. And it was like Lucy Silvis was there and Maren.
So good.
It was this crazy thing that happened. But I just remember being there thinking, we have to do this again. But part of it was like, even within each other, every show has a different, it never feels businessy to us. The us being on it never feels that way. But I think it just like recharges our hearts, which as cheesy as that sounds. Like, just please do what you do best. Like, Sarah Buxton, get up here and sing whatever you want to. Nicole, come sing. Like, just take 2 songs, take the spotlight, put it all on you, because it's the talents here. It's not like there's a lack of talent. But it's been fun to be a part of that for me, because it's made me, I think, just believe in what's coming up in this town. And like, I've watched Caitlin Smith unleash her artistry in that moment of like, just, you can tell there's no thought, no, it's not that she didn't care, she's just getting to fully like be in her song and let her talent just like explode in that moment. And same with Lucy, and I don't know, there's so much out there that the bummer is that people are missing out on it, because I remember listening to Martina and Faith and Dixie Chicks and all that
again. Yeah. Everything is cyclical.
Yes.
The one thing that I've now been around long enough. I'm in my 30s. I've been around long enough to see everything comes in cycles.
Yeah, so.
And what happens is there are screw-ups.
Yeah.
And this is how a problem in my mind works. So you have a problem.
Yeah.
You fix it. It's fixed. So then you don't worry about it anymore. And then while you're not worrying about it, it becomes a problem again.
Yeah, and that's where the
it's just a constant thing. So anyway, I'm not going to be there, but I'm doing. So I have a line, a girl power line, and
yes, you guys are going to have your stuff there.
We are, and so we're working with the charity together.
That's
with
awesome.
The girl,
yeah, thanks for letting us put your stuff out there with us, because we have so many people that come into the show.
Yeah, and it's for a great cause. Like, all the stuff that I do, like that, is all attached to.
That's awesome.
A charity, and so I'm glad you guys are. And we didn't even talk about that before you came in, but yeah.
Yeah, that's what. I already have like my tank tops picked out, and I'm hoping that I like remind myself to go get them before the show starts. Otherwise, I might have to like track you down later and be like, I need the pink
Whatever
one and the black
need.
And white one.
Listen, I got the whole.
You
company.
Might know where they happen. I know the bag and everything. That's I've been seeing them out like Whole Foods and Turnip Truck. People have their bags with the four. Favorite things on them.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Well,
that's so cool.
Thank you. Congratulations. I think I'll play you singing a little bit.
Oh, thanks. Flowers, oh, yay!
You like this one?
That's like my. I put that on the record because whenever I go home to Texas and play, people are going, "Are you gonna play Specklebird?" Or they'll call me that. They're like, "Hey, Specklebird." I'm like, "Hey, Specklebird."
Oh, you know what? I should lean back into the computer for a second because, by the way, I totally leaned back and checked out of my spot. I was getting comfortable there. So this...
Get cozy.
And I didn't put this on the wall here, but...
Lindsay! It comes out Friday.
That's right. And
check
so...
Him,
hold on a minute. Mike, why do I suck at this, dude? Hold on.
Oh, there goes Mike's leg.
Here we go. So... What happened was, so there are 12 songs on Lindsay's record.
Yes.
And 9 of them she wrote, and 3 of them
are outside.
Are outside, and like female. She's like heavy female.
Yeah.
So Space is a song that you wrote, and Caitlin.
Yeah, and our friend Maggie Chapman.
And so, and it's on the record.
We wrote it in Austin.
You did?
Mm-hmm. I'm running out of air up here, so far out of your atmosphere. Remember when you were right here, and we'd burn like the sun.
She said, "Tell you hi." By the way, she loves you.
I love her.
Baby, we were so caught up.
I didn't tell her she's on the road because the record comes out next week, and so I.
I know. We tried to get her for Wednesday, but I know she has a crazy.
And she was like, "Yeah, the party's coming. Oh my! Tell her I said hello. You know we wrote Space. Tell her I said hello."
Oh, I love that.
Are you out there with the stars? All alone? Is there someone in your arms? Said that you needed, I said that I'd wait, but baby, I hate this space.
Oh, she did such a good job on that.
When you guys write this, because I heard the work tape, and I think Caitlin sang the demo.
Caitlin sang it, and so, she sang it the day after the CMAs, so I'm sure her voice was like...
Well, it was fantastic, because Caitlin, fun fact, we started this podcast partially because of Caitlin.
Yeah,
because I'm friends with Caitlin, and Caitlin did the $1 million show last year. We brought her out, and you know, it was like Garth, and I was like, Caitlin, come sing a song. Just come sing, and I know the crowd's gonna. And Caitlin's just awesome.
She's so awesome.
Like as a person, she came and opened some shows for us on the road.
Yeah,
she's way too good to do that, but she's awesome.
She's
and
so fun
I was
to
like,
on.
Caitlin, I texted her. I was like, hey, I'm gonna start this podcast.
Yeah.
About like behind the scenes in Nashville songwriting. I was like, will you come up and be like one of the first guests? And
she
was,
that's so cool.
And it was like her and Ryan Hurd.
Oh,
it was
that's
before,
so great.
It was before Ryan had
his deal
thing
like
going, his artist thing.
Yeah.
And so, she's partially responsible for this, these
that's
70
so cool. Way to go, Caitlin.
Episodes.
That's so awesome.
So, well, thanks for
I loved them.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for letting me yap in your comfy chairs.
Yeah, I appreciate it. What, is there anything so else? Like, cool. So what do you do tomorrow?
Tomorrow, I am writing twice, and I'm playing the Bluebird Cafe.
Okay, let me ask you this. That's okay, you have three things. That's a busy day. Yeah. If you're writing twice, do you save your better ideas for the write that you think could be better?
Well, I've already half written the morning song, so I'm just finishing that song. But actually, the morning song I got from somebody's hashtag. We're writing a song called Old Truck, New Love. We're finishing. Jordan Mitten and Aaron S.S. and I are finishing that song. And then I've been screenshotting a lot from Instagram when people will like, say the coolest things, and then I'm like, oh, that's a song, that's a song, that's a song. It used to be Pinterest, where I like dive into Pinterest, but so I do need to find an idea for Matt. I kind of think I know what I'm gonna take
for the second, right?
For the second, right?
And who are you writing with secondly?
Matt Dragstrom, and then I think his name, the other guy, he's a Tree Vibes writer, Andy Albert. I think he's a Tree Vibes. I might be wrong on that. But
Tree Vibes is the FGL crew.
Yeah, but he's new to me, and I'm new to him. But Matt and I have written a bunch. And then I'm doing the 9 o'clock show over at, while John Mayer's playing, I'll be at the Bluebird.
You know what sucks? And it doesn't suck, but yeah. So you're doing that. I went to watch John Mayer in Minneapolis. I'm such a... I love John Mayer. But I can't go tomorrow because I'm doing stand-up at the Opry. They haven't had a comedian in forever. And they were like...
You're on the Opry.
Yeah, so I'm doing stand-up at the Opry during Mayer. And I picked... They were like, okay, if you want to go to Mayer, we understand. And I was like, no. Because I've played the Opry.
Yeah.
But
like the band.
Yes, but I've never done stand-up at the Opry. And it was such a big deal to bring comedy back. And I was like...
That is cool. It used to be like Grandpa Jones did that.
I know. And so there's a lot of pressure for me.
A lot of legacy happening.
Jerry Clower.
Yeah.
And my grandma and I would... So I was like, I can go watch John Mayer in another city at another time.
Right.
So I'm going to go do the Opry. And you're doing the Bluebird.
See, we're being like very Nashville tomorrow.
We are. Where's...
Yeah.
Well, that's so cool. Thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me. It's good to see you. It was really an honor.
I'm telling you, I was just bragging my brain. I was like, why did I stop her and say I and I couldn't remember what it was. I knew it wasn't the Brett stuff. Like, yeah, I like the Brett stuff.
I don't even know if it was around then.
But the Brett stuff doesn't like resonate in my heart. Like, Brett doesn't sing to me.
That, like, the Cocaine Jesus thing is like, it reminds me of like how I feel about, well, because I wrote it, I don't mean to like toot my own horn or anything like that, but I used to be obsessed, and I still am, because I saw it the other day, Heartbreaker with Ryan Adams. Do you ever get into Ryan Adams stuff?
I got into Ryan Adams, like, when New York yes. time. I'm not super Ryan Adams cool,
yeah.
but I'm kind of Ryan Adams cool.
That might be my level, too.
Okay.
Like, I'm not, like, versed in everything. When he started writing albums in the studio, I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to know everything about it. But there's that feeling I need from songs in that one. I'm glad you played it, because I hadn't heard it on really pretty speakers, just on my phone.
I'm like a Ryan Adams guy when he does Taylor Swift record. That's the kind of my Ryan Adams. Yeah. When he does a whole, that's
that,
I'm like,
that
yeah,
cover album, that was really
this
cool.
I can get into.
That's awesome.
But let me see. Do you know Jillian Jacklin?
Yes, I love her.
So she's been doing some shows with Ryan Adams.
I saw that.
And the weird thing is, she's going to come out and open, because Carly Pierce has a few more shows she's opening at my stand-up, but Jillian's coming out and opening it for me for the fourth quarter. And I'm like, man, from the coolest to the absolute dorkiest.
No, it'll be like...
I mean, it is like her world. Like, because okay. She sent me an Insta story opening for Ryan Adams in St. Louis, and Ryan Adams was playing like 3 days before us.
Yeah.
And there was a Raging Idiot saying that sold out. And I was like, oh, you're up for a treat.
Get
ready. I'm going to tell you, the Ryan Adams crowd and the Raging Idiots crowd are not the
different.
Same crowd. Yeah.
Sometimes a crowd is a vibe, isn't it? I guess you'll have a different experience.
Do you know what Ryan Adams' most streamed song is? You'll never guess.
No.
It's Wonderwall.
Really? Wow. I wouldn't have guessed that one. I would have guessed the one about with the F-bomb in the middle of it.
It's crazy. This is his most streamed song. It's not even his song. I guess so, Ryan Adams is so cool that the mainstream isn't Ryan Adamsy.
Yeah.
Today's gonna be the day that they're gonna give it back to you.
That sounds
crazy. By now you should have somehow.
You know, he also had When the Stars Go Blue.
Oh, the one that Tim McGraw
yes.
did, right?
Yes. It's his version is so good.
Evening fell.
Like, this is a jam. Mm,
yeah. Dancing in your wooden shoes in a wedding gown. Dancing out on 7th Street.
Like, that makes me feel, like, warm in my heart.
Yeah.
Dancing through the underground.
This isn't saved. I gotta save this. It's been a while since I've even...
Dancing little.
You know, sometimes you get in wormholes of music, and you're like, oh, how did I forget about this? Oh!
I know. I wish... you know what's so funny? When Ross and I were first starting to write, like, and nobody cared what we did, we're like, we thought everybody, when they, like, the big writers would sit around and, like, get inspired, like, listen to these records and then go write. We didn't realize, like, they don't have time to, like, brush their teeth, much less. You know, like, but we had this, I think, just romanticized idea of what was happening. And so I remember once I went over to Towson. He was living over in Bellevue, and we listened to, like, the whole White album from the Beatles. And I think it was, like, we're not going to talk. We're just going to listen to the record, and then I'll go home and we'll like absorb everything we just heard, and then we'll write a song.
How'd that work out?
I think it worked out great.
Yeah,
I think we're like, this is what all the legends are doing, and then you get in that world and you're like, oh my gosh, somebody order pizza. Nobody went to the grocery store for 9 days. Like, everybody's playing guitar.
Man, Ryan has this so much. It's
I might need to drop into that rabbit hole for a little bit.
I went into this when Kip came by. I went into the Springsteen rabbit hole.
Oh yeah,
like the old, old Springsteen stuff. Yeah. And just sometimes it's just good to find that old awesome music that makes
I know.
Well, have you seen the on HBO
the documentary that everybody's been watching? Yeah. I haven't yet, but I've talked to so many people.
You'll love it. You can not like Dr. Dre or Jimmy Iovine. You will love it and be so inspired by the whole thing.
That's what I keep hearing.
What's it called?
Brett's watched it.
The Defiant Ones.
Yeah, Brett watched it and we had a dinner for like the people. Tom Douglas was there, like Ross and
Tom just came by here a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, we were all talking about like just that came up, and it was like that was the conversation.
Yeah.
So I was like, I have to see this. And it's so freaking time.
It's like two people that come from two different places,
yeah,
with no real advantages in life, and now they're billionaires. And it doesn't go from A to B, but it goes from A, B, C, D, E, F, G, all the way. I mean, it's.
And that's a different. That was like, where's the meat of the timeline of that? Is that like early?
Well, it started
90s.
So Jimmy Iovine was basically Bruce Springsteen's tape guy.
Shut up.
Like he was just running tape.
Okay, that's what they were talking about because that was the big deal.
He would be there before and after. But at night, he was producing Patti Smith.
Yes. Okay.
Secretly. Oh, listen to this story. I'm going to tell you a story I won't ruin it because I took from the first episode.
Okay.
And something
you're fine. I'll still watch it. I was blown away by,
right? So he's running tape for Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
He meets Patti Smith. And Patti Smith's punk, you know.
Yeah.
And so he starts talking about the song that Bruce had written.
Yeah.
And he's like, Patti, listen to this tape. You need to cut it. She wouldn't listen to the tape. She's like, I only cut my own songs.
Whoa.
She's like, I only cut my own songs, right? And so she wouldn't listen to the tape. And I'm just like, what? I wonder what this song is, you know, that she won't listen to because I know it's going to come to a head eventually.
Yeah.
And usually, I'm pretty good with music. Like, I have a pretty good...
Yeah, take on...
Not even just take, but I'm just like an encyclopedia of music.
Like, you would be like, oh,
and so, there's this song by 10,000 Maniacs, and I'm going to play it here. And I've heard it a million times. Hold on a second. Why can I not find this? 10,000. Here we go. There's a song by 10,000 Maniacs, right? And from MTV Unplugged. I don't know if you ever watched MTV Unplugged back in the day.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I remember this song like crazy. And I, you know, Because the Night from 10,000 Maniacs.
Oh my gosh, yes, the live version.
Yeah. And so this ended up being their version of it.
Take me down, baby, here's I am.
So I knew this from 10,000 Maniacs, and that's all I knew it from.
Yes.
Now, what Jimmy Iovine did is, this was the song that Bruce Springsteen wrote, put it on a tape, gave it to Patti Smith,
and this is what
the original version was. I had no idea.
That blows my mind.
And this was her biggest hit.
Take me now, baby, here's I am.
And Bruce wrote that.
Bruce wrote it. And she wrote on it as well, but it was Bruce's.
And, like, tape.
Yeah, and he's the one that got it to her.
Love is a banquet on which we feed. Come on now.
That's like an iconic song.
I didn't know it was a cover. I'm such an idiot. And then did you know that, Mike?
I didn't know that.
I didn't know.
Then I was watching that show. Did you know?
No.
Oh. Anyway,
so
you'll love it.
That's
you'll
so
love
cool.
The show.
Okay, now I have like definitely had to.
But that was for me. I was like, dang, I'm so blown away that I didn't know that. I'm such an idiot. But then to hear the story of him running tape, he was up there 16 hours a day with Bruce, producing just her.
Yeah, that's like, so cool.
Listen to the song. Asking Bruce for permission to give it away because he wasn't going to use it.
Can we make your song legendary? Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Let me think about it.
Well, thank you for coming by.
Thank you.
Yeah, sorry. We go down many wormholes.
Hey, I'm all about it.
Mike, what episode is this?
74.
Episode 74. Yeah, Dad. Heather Morgan. What's your name on Instagram?
Heather 11, and 11 is spelled out.
Heather 11.
E-L-E-V-E-N.
Why is it that?
Well, because it was my lucky number.
When you were 11, you set it up, or what?
I just like the number 11. I used to see 11-11 on the clock. It's so weird to say that, but my album had 11 songs on it, but now I'm adding... 1 to make it 12, so I'm going to call it 11 plus 1. I don't want to mess it up.
Well, let me know when that record's ready. I want to hear it.
I will, for sure.
It's good to see you.
Thank you. You too.
We're going to go. We'll see you next time. Bye, buddy.
Okay.